Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
All right, let's go on Friday. You're rolling with Jason and John, 929 FM, ESPN. Yes, May 2nd. Yes, Friday. And yes, the NBA playoffs are rolling on. But first and foremost, certainly big news out of the NBA, out of San Antonio. Salute. Word has come out. Looks like Popovich going to be stepping down as head coach. And stepping in to the front office in San Antonio as team president, I believe I read, a salute and a round of applause for Greg Popovich. Rude to many a reporter, but he had probably earned it, right? Different than J.J. Redick. Playoffs roll on. Big Body Brunson was doing in our Pistons. There was a point where I thought John had made it to the promised land. Because I sensed, yes, he was on that Piston side last night. Dang it, JB! We didn't execute down the stretch, did we, John? You ready to move off of us already after 1 year?
Yes.
You can't do that. This is our first year. We went from worst to playoffs.
He called a timeout.
It wasn't good.
When Schroeder was they had a 2-on-1 break. He was getting downhill. He called a timeout. I mean, we know what JB is. JB is a stage coach, right? He gets you to a certain stage, and then he cannot elevate you. He cannot lift you past that stage. And look, there's some accountability that needs to be had with a lot of those guys. Cade Cunningham can't be a star of his franchise and have 4 points in the fourth quarter. An elimination game. I mean, that is unacceptable. You can't be outscored by Jalen Duren. All love to Jalen Duren if you're a real star. So
this guy's first time in, bro.
It was, but it showed.
And yeah, and they got tight down the stretch. In addition to yes, some mistakes clearly made on the coaching front as well. I would agree. But that's going from like what 18 wins to pushing the Knicks to the brink, essentially. It could have been to the brink.
Yeah, I mean, they should have won the series probably.
You're right. Cade's going to have to step it up, but that's – I think you and I probably believe deep down he's capable. That was a first taste for him.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, I think the cautionary tale that we learned in Memphis is just because it looks bright for you doesn't mean that it always will.
Yeah.
At some point you do have to cash that in. They may not. I don't know. I mean
– that looks like a just getting started to me as opposed to a – now, let's see if he can get it to elite.
Yeah.
And you're coming off 18 wins.
Yeah, no, they're building. They're building for sure. I mean, next year they should try to be a top four seed, and
I mean,
and
it really says
there.
More to me about the Knicks
and
what they're not, right? That should have been a sweep based on where Detroit is in terms of building. Remember, they had to run money out of there last year.
Yeah.
This thing was, what do we have? Let's see what JB can do with it. Credit to them. They come up short. JB probably will always come up short in terms of having the elite team. I'm with you there. But Big Body Brunson was the story at the end.
Big Body Brunson.
Thompson was actually playing good defense on him, possession at until the end.
Yeah, he just got shake out of his shoes at the end there. That looked like Brad against Tyler Griggs at pickup. I mean, it was just you just feel bad for the guy.
Nobody's giving him the credit for, like, the five straight stops he got on Brunson before, though. Like, you're only going to stop that guy so many times.
Oh, 100%.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, and he had set him up pretty good. They broke down the play, man. The way he uses his off arm to make Thompson think he's going to drive.
Yep.
Boom.
And he went for the three, you know?
Crossed him over, and boom. Nasty stuff.
Yeah. I mean, did you realize, Brad, by the way, that Brunson was watching, he was inspired by your crossover dribble?
It was this pickup game.
Yeah. I mean, Brad, y'all don't know this, but 10 years ago, Brad did that to somebody else. And so I know how Thompson's feeling right now.
That body's buried on Park Avenue, brother.
Still there, man. You can pass by it every day. It's really unfortunate. Thompson's body is buried in Little Caesars Arena.
Yes, it is.
He's going to be fine.
Again, we will rebuild.
No shame in that.
That was a flyer, y'all.
We will rebuild. Oof. We will rebuild in Detroit. There's no doubt about it. Did it look like JB was drinking some water from Flint at the end of the game? 100%. Something got into him. But you know, again, young team, and that does happen. There are stages to it, right?
Yeah, they're just getting started.
Yeah, but again, so are the Grizzlies. And then they top out, you know. So,
I guess like 3-4 years ago they were.
Yeah. They had to do the play-in thing, right. And then they came back as a two. So, yeah, now we'll see in 25-26 what moves they make. They got to get rid of Tim Hardaway Jr. They got to get rid of, you know, the older contracts.
Yeah, probably don't need Tobias if it's going to get to the next level.
Right. But I mean.
I like the core, dude.
Duren obviously was awesome last night.
We'll see what they got with Ivy when he gets back.
Yep, that's true. Yeah. They got a lot of young promise, so they should be excited there for sure. Big Saturday. Anthony Saint's going to join us at 11:25. We'll talk to him about the Grizzlies, about the offseason, about the NBA playoffs, Lakers, and a lot more at 11:25. Then at 1:25, Parthi Padjai will join us from the road. We will talk to him about Memphis basketball, sort of the news there, which is that they did go ahead and sign Sincere Parker. People were kind of curious about that because he was the only guy that had committed who had not signed. He did sign yesterday. So now all the guys that you've committed have signed.
Excellent.
And now the only, thing you're waiting on is P.J. Haggerty in terms of, you know, the immediate. You know, you're recruiting maybe Curtis Givens III. You're recruiting this kid, Elijah Gray. But in terms of the big fish, it seems like that's going to boil down to P.J. Haggerty. And Goodman had the tweet last night that sounds like NC State has taken the lead in the recruitment. The tweet was, NC State is heavily in the mix. Haggerty is not slated to visit Ole Miss anytime soon, and Texas is not and hasn't ever been involved, source told Field of 68. A return to Memphis seems improbable right now. Haggerty's scheduled to work out for the Celtics today. A couple of NBA executives told me that he is projected to go mid-second round to undrafted at this point in the process. So that is where it stands on P.J. Haggerty. The only, I think, difference here is that NC State, it sounds like, has taken the lead over potentially Ole Miss at this stage. And, you know, that's one of those schools where, all right, we're in May. They didn't get maybe the guys they wanted.
It's also Will Wade.
It's Will Wade.
Strong as offer.
You know, you are maybe willing to spend a little more
With a lot of goodwill behind him as of, you know, mm-hmm. coming over there.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, either, you know, they could have upped their offer. That maybe they didn't even, you know, maybe it was they're right there as it is with 3.5, 3.7. Who knows what it is? But I can absolutely see them saying, you know what, we'll just throw them 4.
Yeah.
And we'll end this.
Yep.
So, you know, saying it's improbable that he's coming back to Memphis certainly puts us in a different conversation than when we were in yesterday when we were talking about the possibility of having them both, him and Dane Danger.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was always a long shot just because the Memphis' offer has been on the table for months and they have not taken it, right? And I think in some ways Memphis kind of interpreted that as, you know, the message. But when you go through this process and you don't get what you seek.
Although if it was 4, why not just do it? That's what you asked for. Why not? Why wouldn't it be done already? If that's what NC State was offering now.
Right.
It
would be done.
Yeah.
Like I,
they just have the most and whatever below 4 that number that is.
That's right.
You said Ole Miss is at 3.5 top side?
Yeah.
High side?
Yeah. So, and is that even, you know, and I don't even know if that money is necessarily constructed all, you know, guaranteed or whatever. I just don't know. So, because if you had 3.5, you probably are taking that too, because you're running out of options at this point. I mean, you got to go somewhere.
Unless you think Will Wade's going to jump, and why wouldn't he? I mean, that guy.
Well, all of this, right?
Throw another 200 on it. Make it 3.9. You know what I'm saying? It's surely that's within the realm of possibility with Will Wade there.
Yeah, all of it's excited. Just a leverage play. I mean, at this point, you're just trying to leverage as much people as you can against the other and maximize your money. And so it's really hard to – that's why Memphis is like, we're standing where we're at.
Well, I heard something today. I mean, I know he wanted to play point guard 70% of the time. I heard Munns mention that today. Is that part of the demand?
Yeah.
70% of the time. Now you're getting to a point when you've brought in a guy like Doug, right, to where, you know, sure, maybe you can work that out to where PJ's not complaining about it, and it's not quite 70, but I'm getting to a point, and it's not quite Nico here because PJ has earned the raise. Mm-hmm. But my point is, and especially if you're telling me too that there's still that the possibility that you get Dane Danger is still open there, right? I don't know. Sure, having PJ Haggerty back would be good for Memphis. But I think there's probably also a road where not having him back at this point, especially if you can get Dane back on this waiver, you might be better off.
Yeah, Goodman tweeted on the 18th that his demands were $4 million plus and to primarily play point guard.
I saw primarily, but 70%. If you're putting percentages on it, I think you're getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know.
But again, I understand it because we said what the NBA folks were going to tell PJ is you have to be on ball.
Yes.
You are a turnover machine. You're not going to get away with that playing shooting guard at your six. We don't have those in the league.
Correct.
You got to be able to. So, of course, he's going to say, I need to play point guard. But he understood, too, how well it worked with Tyrese. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So he's asking for something different in a way, John.
Oh, he is, yeah.
He ain't. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's where I get to, all right, you know, you've already replaced some of the production.
Mm-hmm.
The likelihood is it won't be AP All-American level.
Right.
What you get, what you fill that void with.
Yep.
But right now, you know, I think the greater need might be, particularly with what you've gotten in the front court,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to get Dane Danger back.
Well, yeah. I mean
that's obviously up to the NCAA. Though.
It is. And you, but look.
You've said that money's there.
They've done that.
Should they get the waiver?
I mean, that's done if he gets the waiver.
And we know he's not going anywhere.
He can't transfer. He didn't end up in the portal.
Been saying it since yesterday afternoon. I think that might be more important right now.
Yeah.
For success next season.
Right.
Based on what you've gotten,
yep,
and how thin you still are in the front court, plus how good Dane Danger was at the end of the year last year. Felt like you were about to ride him that first half against Colorado State to a second weekend.
I think, like, I agree. I mean, you know, they have to get Dane at this point, it feels like, to be considered a good team on paper before the season starts. You know,
I start to like that team.
Yeah, like there's a lot to like about it if Dane's on it. If Dane's not on it, I would sort of not like it as much. I'd be open to the possibility that it could be good, but
well, you'd have to get a big that's going to do something,
right?
You know, banking on Bradshaw or something.
Yeah, I'm just not sure.
I don't want to bank everything on him.
Again, every coach in the country is going to deal with this, though, some level of this, like not knowing how good their team is unless you have a $10 million budget, you know, unless you're a Kentucky or a St. John's or something along those lines. You know, like every coach is going to be guessing, like, you know, how's it going to come together? I will say, like,
I just understand at this point not going up if the three's been on the table the entire time.
Yeah.
You know, take it or leave it.
I think they'll go up a little, but I don't think they'll go up to, like, anything
that's not
going to
be. If it's not
going to
be where Ole Miss
mind.
And NC State are, then.
Yeah, exactly. So unless PJ is willing to give Memphis a discount, basically, you know, even if it's not a huge one, then there's really not a ton to talk about. There's not a ton to, in terms of his return as of today. I will also say that I just think, man, like this is brutal for this is not fun to follow, I think, as a fan. Like this entire, like the fact that it's completely unregulated, the fact that it's like there's no into it, there's no like I just feel like if you're a fan of the sport, if you're a fan of the Memphis program or any team like it, it's got to be exhausting.
I mean, if you're the team that's getting the guy, you don't care.
Oh yeah, you're
and so
you're,
yeah
you're,
yeah. I mean, you can look at it that way that this is not fun. The fact that you're going to lose a second team AP All-American because you know somebody's willing to pay him more after he just had a great season with you. Yeah, that's the nature of things now, and we don't have any problem when we're picking guys off of other programs and caring about what their fans think. It's taken away from college basketball. However, we've seen and we're seeing programs do it, John, where you are keeping guys for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's as much interested in. You're not going to have the Shane Battiers and Scotty Thurmans that stayed there 4 years. Ty Day, I think, at Arkansas.
You're not.
Those are done. And so this is
even two is
this
like
is the nature
tough
of
do.
Right. And if you want this, if you still want to be a college basketball fan, yeah, it's different. But I think most of us have accepted that this is what it is now.
I think like what would
not
make
that
it
we, not that we like it.
Right.
Saying we've accepted.
No, it's
big difference.
It
there.
Is what it is.
I'm with you that this ain't fun in that sense.
Well,
it's free agency
every year. I mean, the NBA, for example, would never agree to a system like this.
And we have less than what everybody else is going to have for the most part. Clearly we have potential still.
What I actually think would help Memphis is if we got to a place with the house settlement and NCAA. I don't know if we will. I have no idea. But if you could give these guys legitimately multi-year contracts, if you could say, like on paper, you know, binding, you know, hey, we'll and give, hey, if you do this and this, then your incentives will go up in the second year of the deal, like a real professional contract.
It's starting to sound like employment, bro.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, that's what it is.
Then we're gonna have to do collective bargaining and everything else.
But I kind of think the sport needs it as much as, I mean, who does anybody still think this is amateurism? I mean, like you're nobody actually thinks that. So let's start treating it like what it actually is, and that way, like you actually give programs like Memphis a chance to identify. Like, this is where identifying Guy P.G. Haggerty could be, like, could have worked out for you. Like, all right, he averaged 20 a game last year at Tulsa. He was AAC player of the year. Let's give him a 2-year deal. Like, we don't have to worry about him. We'll give him a 2-year deal for XYZ year one, XYZ year two if he does this. You know, so.
But I would ask you, when Cal was leaving here for Kentucky, didn't you feel the same way? Like basketball coaches have been doing this forever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we got players, and we need players doing it now can pick up and go on you for more money.
Yep.
And, yes, we need regulations. But this is just the chickens coming home to roost.
Oh, 100%.
That's all this is. I mean, because we can't be – they've been allowed to do this forever. I mean, Cal goes to a blue blood, he leaves you, you feel like you've had a part of his – the fact that he can take that job.
Yeah.
Right? That was you that brought him in here and gave him the resources that he needed to build this thing up. And so much like you're talking about right now, if I'm a Memphis basketball fan, I loved PJ Haggerty last season. But I can't, you know, coaches have done it for years and now players are and they've got that freedom and that's why they just think, whether you like it or not, we can do that, but I think having to accept it at this point is what it is. Where I'm with you, yes, regulations are needed, but I'm not sure how you can do that with the veil of amateurism still on everything. You don't keep that veil on it, then you're not going to be able to do these contracts the way you
want to,
and limit these guys.
But I'm for
as employees
ripping that bandaid off because it ain't nothing but a veneer at this point. I mean, everybody knows that this is like, and it really was never that. It was just like there was no open and free market, and so everything got done under the table. But the system is gone. I mean, it's holding by a thread. I don't even know what's holding it up at this point. Like, the college football playoffs, not the NCAA. I guess all the NCAA has is the tournament. That's the only thing they still got. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know exactly how much the settlement. I'm not a legal analyst. I don't know exactly how much it's going to change. I know that Deloitte's going to be involved, and it's going to approve, you know, anything over $600. But even when NIL was introduced, Jason, it was supposed to be something completely different. It was supposed to be like brands working with you.
Play.
Yeah, it was like they said, this is not pay-for-play. This is just your opportunity to use your likeness. And I don't think – I can't recall. I mean, I know there were some engagements with FedEx that PJ probably – I think I can remember those off the top of my head. I don't remember anything else other than that, you know, and I can guarantee you that FedEx was not footing the entirety of the bill for PJ Haggerty's money last year. So, I mean, everything the NCAA says just doesn't hold weight, you know. I just wish we could get to a point to where we at least would have a chance to do multi-year contracts, you know, or agreements or understandings or anything that would incentivize guys to maybe not have to look elsewhere every year. Because it's not good for the sport. Forget Memphis. Like, I can't, you know, none of these fan bases, right, are getting to know their players except the elite of the elite. And if you just say, like.
I mean, Houston, again, they know their players pretty good. There are teams that are keeping them.
Yeah.
You know, there's ways to do this and have a balance.
But I would say they're the elite of the elite, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like.
No, you're limited in terms of resources. Houston's kept a lot of those guys, not just because they love Kelvin Sampson, because they've, I'm sure, paid them and given them raises, probably had to do it.
Right.
I mean, there is a, you know, a reality in this world where guys got to get their dollar, even if they like you as a coach. But
well, and I'm all about that. Like, I don't begrudge it. But
how long Pearl developed Broom.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Bring him in from Morehead State, had him for a few years, he becomes the player he is.
Yeah.
You felt you had Auburn fans had plenty of time to fall in love with him. That's still happening.
No, that is happening. It is happening.
You know, DeAndre Williams was the same thing not so long ago.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, whether it's a King Tedford, you know, again, I'm not talking the highest end here, but
yeah.
a guy who could be very important for you
yeah.
in terms of he can be a role player, quality, good to great level role player that's here for multiple years. If you're talking about liking it, yeah, that's how you like it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Memphis kids that are here multiple years, but more importantly, having some continuity.
Yeah.
There's a way this can be done, but we've said it's going to be hard for Penny to get there if you're not keeping a couple of these guys every year.
It's impossible.
I mean, you lost Jared. You lost Okoja. You know, it became in many ways. Was just Dante you're retaining and
I think that's it, bro.
Dane if you get him?
Yeah, Dane, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's every year, and so he's got to. And it feels like with Ashton, with Tedford, you know, you can see some of these guys being here that long. We even said it with Zach, although, you know, he could get that graduate year, although he would. He
yep.
certainly wasn't ready to commit and do business on the show.
And again, we talked about it with a little bit last week, but there was a piece up at Evan Miyakawa's website about returning, how hard it is to get to a Final Four when you don't have returners.
It's incredibly important in terms of what Penny's got to, you know, get find a way to skin this cat.
Yep.
You know, get guys in it. And I think you can tell sort of some of it's been with trying to keep PJ, not trying, you know, some of it's been with that the priority.
Yep.
But obviously, guys like King Tedford, I mean, he should be here for a while, I would hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you keep him.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of these other ones, man, some of these freshmen that are coming in, you got to find a way to retain them. I know it's hard.
Well, if you do hit on those guys, it is easier to do that because they're not making as much, right?
Right.
You can give them a big raise. That would be still significantly less than what P.J. Haggard is going to make this year.
100%.
So, like, you know, P.J. was making it basically $1 million last year. You had to go to what you had to go to try to keep him, and he was an All-American.
Right.
So his raise was in order. But if you go from, you know, all right, I'm paying X, Y, I'm paying this guy $300, let's say he's a double-digit, you know, figure scorer, I can give him a raise to $750 to come back. And he's going to be happy with mm-hmm. that. You know,
that's happening at Auburn. It's happening at Houston. All these places that you noted that have the continuity and are making the pushes.
Unfortunately, PJ had too good a year almost.
Well, and we don't have what they have.
Right.
In terms of two retained.
Like, you almost.
Yes, we're okay. Group of five, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't have what these big programs have to retain these guys either. And or at least the potential, that high a ceiling.
It's the trade-off, right?
On
like,
those resources.
Like, if PJ's not an All-American, you know, he's probably not getting the money that he's getting.
Yeah.
You know, but you would rather him have been an All-American because it looks good for you and your program.
100%.
You know, so it's a trade. It's a trade. And, again, the idea would be let's run this again with somebody else. Let's go get another guy, turn him into an All-American type guard and try to do it that way. It's hard to do, but.
Doug and Sincere?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I mean, Sincere Parker. You know, I know he had a weird year last year, but there were four straight games in his season at St. Louis at the end of the year where that man put up 30 points four games in a row. Like, in the A-10, which is a solid league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that...
It was a better league than yours.
I feel like if you can do that...
It was the A-10 this year. Go ahead. Of course, if you can do that, then yeah, what is going to look like in the Americas?
Yeah. Like, he's got a shot. Now, again, I hear he's not a great defender, but that's fine. We'll figure that out. But if you could score 30 points four games in a row, 30-plus points four games in a row, you're a bucket. He's a bucket. And he was on a team last year that, like, wasn't great offensively, you know, probably didn't give him the freedom that he wanted. At McNeese State, they played a certain type of way. I'm open to that being awesome, you know, to Sincere being a really good player. You know, doesn't have the plaudits that PJ came in with, but.
Yeah, they were 8th. You were 11th.
Yeah, I mean, that's
A-10, eighth best league. You fell to 11th.
They had what? They had Dayton, VCU, George Mason.
VCU, George Mason, Dayton, Loyola.
Loyola.
That's St. Joe's, St. Louis. St.
Yeah,
Louis
I mean,
usually not, what, 10 and 15. Well, excuse me, 19 and 15.
Yeah, I mean, all those teams are better than the American, right? I mean, what?
Oh, yeah, it's better than American. I mean, all the way down to, you know, George Washington, which is down here 7th, 8th team in their league, is a lot stronger than what you got down 7, 8.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, George Washington won 21 games last year.
You know, you're just hoping that these guys can take advantage of a weak league, right? And I see no reason why Sincere Parker can't do it. And you wait for Dane's waiver, and then you go from there, and that's probably your team. You know, maybe you bring in Elijah Gray to start at the four. and bring Ashton off the bench if that is how it goes down. But this is basically it. I mean, I know you have 15 scholarships now, but you don't have 15, you know, you don't have 15 scholarships worth of money in terms of relevant players. And plus, you're not going to play that many guys anyway.
You give me Dane back, I can get up for this team.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can start to look and say, you know what? Okay, this team's going to win the American.
AAC favorite. And now, tournament again.
Let's see how good guys can be and see where you go from there.
And again, like, Memphis has always been good when they have, like, when DeAndre was back every year. Like, Memphis was good those years.
Of course.
Just like, hey, I know this is the veteran voice. Like, this is the guy. And then you can sort of supplement that. You bring in Kendrick one of those years, and obviously he became number one. But it was a luxury that Memphis could sort of price in every year, and they have not had that at all in the last three. So hopefully this happens, and Memphis is able to maintain Dame. But, yeah, it doesn't sound like P.J. Haggerty is in the cards for Memphis. And we weren't expecting it, but this is kind of where it's at right now with the situation. Come back, talk NBA and Grizzlies with Anthony Sane. Get his thoughts on the offseason, the coaching hire, all that and more. Stick around. Jason and John, 90 Turn FM, ESPN.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Anthony Sane is the host of the Anthony Sane Show on Bluff City Media. New episodes every Wednesday and Friday. Underground king of Memphis sports media, tribal chief of Grizz Twitter, independent journalist and founder of Asylum Media Group, and father of five-star 2032 Most Sport prospect Gabriel Sane. Follow him on X at Sane Asylum. He joins us now like he does every Friday. We're happy to have him. Brother Sane, I don't know, have you seen Hollinger's piece today over at The Athletic about what the Grizzlies should do now?
No, but I heard y'all talking about it earlier, but no, I have not read the piece.
It's a lot of focus on Ja, and the reason I bring it up to you is because, you know, Hollinger was in that front office and obviously was a part of bringing Jaren in, which he points out, saying league executives say right now, you know, Ja is the biggest issue because he's, you know, you can't get enough leadership out of him. You can't get enough durability or at least on the floor out of him, and sort of came to the conclusion that, you know, Bane's going to be hard to trade as well if you decide to go that route and you need to re-sign Jaren. I think all three of us agree that Ja, you don't touch, right,
at this point? Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's the consensus, though, Sam. I don't know if everybody feels that way.
Well, the front office.
Everybody who?
We know the front office does, right?
Fair enough. The people that don't matter might feel that way.
Because even though Kleiman on that Sunday on the exit interviews didn't commit to the big three necessarily staying together going forward, he did, and Drew told us yesterday, he did say that the approach is the same with Ja as it was when he was responding to the Howard Beck podcast, remember?
You talking to me or you talking to Ja?
I was talking to you.
Oh, my bad. As far as Ja is concerned, man, I get really, like, extremely agitated with, like, today, like, how people view the NBA today, like how people view success and, you know, how teams should build, how teams should move. I was riding in the car on the way to the house to get ready to hop on with y'all. And I was thinking about the Utah Jazz, right? The Utah Jazz have never won an NBA championship, right? And they've gotten awfully close. They went to the finals, you know, several times in the 90s. But that team, that organization has never won a championship. But if you ask people about today's metrics, about today's standards, what the Utah Jazz are doing now is what teams should do, right? Just, you know, if you just rebuild, tear things up, get pieces, get assets, get draft picks, you know, tank, try to get to, you got to get a star to build this thing around, all those type of things, right? You ask anybody in Utah, man, they'll take that 15-year run of Karl Malone and John Stockton just being really, really good for a long time. Like, it's gotten to the point where I just hate talking basketball when it comes down to certain topics, because there's not a planet in the world where you get a player like John Morant who's a megastar. And how you determine stardom is all relative to the person, right? But you're talking about a guy who's super marketable, who gets attention. People are talking about him. People come to see him. People come to see him in Memphis and on the road. Kids are wearing his jerseys. People are buying his shoe. There's nothing you can do to replace that. Like, you're not going to get any better if you trade John Morant. And you're not going to bring anybody in who has that type of appeal. When Damian Lillard was with Portland was never going to win a championship. But Portland held on to Damian Lillard because he was a draw and he was somebody that was connected to that city for a long time. Trae Young is not going to be traded in Atlanta. They're never going to win a championship. But Trae Young is a guy who's marketable. He's connected to that city. People are going to pull for him. You don't just trade John Morant because you can't win a championship. I understand at the end of the day there's going to be a champion crowned every year and your ultimate goal is to win a championship. But the odds of you winning the championship are low. But in that meantime, in between time, you should at least make it where where there's a draw in your city. And getting rid of John Morant would be the most. It's just really silly how we talk about sports nowadays, bro. Because it's like there are a lot of teams who never won a championship, but you're not gonna act like that the history and the enjoyable moments of those franchises don't exist.
It's one thing to talk about it, but it seems like league execs, too, seem to, or at least some of them saying, I ain't saying the majority of them, think that that's the best move for them. So you're right. I mean, I get frustrated with the conversation, too, particularly when it comes to fans saying, oh, just trade this guy. But when Hollinger is saying that front office folks are thinking that that's the real fix, that's what – you know, that's when I go back to it and say, wow. I mean, we've gotten to that point already with Ja, when you've still got him signed up and you've seen guys grow out of stages and you know how box office he is to Memphis. I think that's the part that surprises me, that he Hollinger would seem to present that, you know, many, multiple league execs believe you have to move off. We're not just talking fans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's crazy, bro. And it's like, and when you ask them to, it's crazy how you look at national media, right? They'll say, oh, the Grizzlies need to move Ja, right? They need to move Ja. That's the problem. They need to move Ja. But then you see these trade proposals, and there's a bunch of nonsense coming back. Like, they want us to move Ja, then they want us to get robbed in the trade as well. So it's like, all right, so why would we listen to any of this? You know what I mean? I cut on Twitter yesterday, and I'm looking at a scenario where the Orlando Magic get better by adding Ja Morant, and their entire starting lineup is still in tow. Like, there's nobody missing. Like, all their dudes are still there. Plus, they got Ja Morant.
Yeah, that was a garbage conversation.
Like, why would we do that, bro? Like, you know, and people, like, the Milwaukee Bucks lose in, you know, the first round of the night, you know, to the Pacers, right? And people are like, the same night, next morning, oh, they got to move Giannis. Why? Why do they need to move Giannis? How does that fix the problem? How do you get better by trading the best player that came through there outside of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson? Like, how does moving that dude fix the problem? I'm not trading Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm not trading Ja Morant. I'm not trading a player of that level in a small market unless that guy is begging and screaming to get out of there. I'm not gonna volunteer to move a player of that level off my team. So all those conversations are insanely silly to me.
Yeah. With that being said, I mean, something has to happen. But how do you sort of ascribe a chance to that when it does in fact take two to tango?
What do you mean, as far as like if you're going to make Ja doing something?
No, else? I've never for once second entertained moving Ja for the reasons that you mentioned.
Okay,
unless he just.
Oh, you mean how do we make the team better next year? Right.
Right, because you know, again, I think a lot of that is we're gonna have to wait to see if Jaren does make the All NBA team, because you can't really move forward until you know that. But it does take two to tango to move somebody.
Right. I think the most important thing with this team, something that a lot of people aren't talking about, they've got to stop this organization. From top down has to stop the bleeding first. This team literally limped into the playoffs, and it's not just injuries. I don't mean limping by guys were hurt, even though we did have guys hurt. There was a lot of just nonsense, stupid, toxic things that were going on with this organization-wise, team-wise, coaching-wise. And I think a lot of those things you have to settle on those things. You have to – if Zach Kleiman is going to be your GM, which it does look like he's still going to be the GM next season, they need to solidify that. They need to go solidify their coaching situation. Go ahead and start implementing what he likes to do. Start getting in the type of guys he likes to get. I don't think this team is in dire straits as much as we are kind of acting like, well, speaking like they are. You're talking about a team that was two or three games away from me in third place, and these conversations would be totally different if we're playing, I don't know who the third seed is, if you're playing the Clippers or you're playing whoever, or you're playing Houston, or whatever, even if, you know, whatever, you're having a different type of conversation. Running to a buzzsaw, running to a 68-win team really exposes you if you're not in the position to be there, right? And the Grizzlies did not look like a team who needed to be in the playoffs when we made the playoffs. So everything is going to be amplified, right? But I think this team, if anything, has to try to find a way to just solidify the roster. And I don't think it takes a massive overhaul. A lot of people saying, you know, get rid of everybody, keep Ja and literally trade everybody. Like, we're not in that type of situation, bro. I think that if anything, I put this on Twitter as well. I think our starting lineup needs to look more like traditional starting lineups of today's NBA that have proven to be successful formulas. And in most teams, you see the lead guard is your leading scorer. He's a big time scorer on your team. So that would be your Ja Morant. Right now, Desmond Bane is your shooting guard who's not a good defender and also is not that great of a playmaker either. I would like to see that position to be somebody that's more of a 3-and-D defender, can knock down shots, can guard the best player on the other team. And it's a perfect situation to me. Ja's your point guard. Jalen Wells is your shooting guard. And your small forward is either one of two type of players. He's either a small forward with size who can score or a small forward with size who can defend and make threes, similar to whoever your shooting guard is. I don't know who that guy is. He's not on our roster right now. And that's why I would try to use Desmond Bane to be a guy to go get that type of guy. Because I love Des. I love his game. I love what he does. But I don't really think that Ja Morant, Desmond Bane backcourt is a championship-bred backcourt. There's no other backcourt of a contending team that's built like that outside of Cleveland. And the shooting guard in that situation is Donovan Mitchell. And if it's not Desmond Bane, he's one of the better shooting guards in the league. A guy could dribble, pass, and shoot. Can actually probably defend better than Dez can. So I just don't like the. I think as long as it's our backcourt, you're always going to have problems because it makes your small forward have to be a guy that can defend the best guy on the other team. And I'd much rather my small forward be able to score more than to be called upon to be your best defender.
What was your faith in Jaren and what he can still be shaken at all by what we saw against OKC and what we've seen from him now in the playoffs for his career?
Mm-hmm. Of course it was. I expected to see more from Jaren, but we're also forgetting that Jaren is a big. He's not a guard, right? And one of the things that bothered me the most in the playoffs, people talk about, well, Jaren let us down. Jaren's not a guard. In the ideal situation, the guards are putting him in a position where he can score. Like, nobody's getting out of the way and expecting Karl Anthony Towns to score off an ISO and go give you 30. Like, he's playing with guards who can break down the defense, set him up to score, get him the ball inside, do what he needs to do, catch him for open shots, all those type of things. Like, we were expecting Jaren to do these things all by himself. And, like, I thought more criticism should have went to the guard play in the playoffs because when John went down, the guard play totally died. Like, Lou Dort was actually able to take Desmond Bane totally out of the game. And like I talked about on my show, check out the Anthony Sane Show on YouTube. Search Anthony Sane Show, Bluff City Media, either of those things, it should pull up. One of the key things I talked about when it came down to that was if I were to have a draft of the entire NBA, because a lot of discussion is about Jaren versus Dez, right? That's what the topic was for today's show that you'll see at noon. Check it out anytime. It's Jaren versus Dez. What do you do? You're probably going to move one. Which one do you move? If there's an NBA draft where the NBA redrafted the entire league, 30 out of 30 teams is going to take Jaren over Desmond Bane. So why should the Grizzlies think any different? Like, Jaren is clearly a better player than Desmond Bane. Desmond Bane is, like, what you see with Desmond Bane now is what he's going to be for the rest of his career. Nothing's really going to change about his game. I've always thought with Jaren, as well as a lot of other players on this team, is that the way that they are is because of the coaching system they've had their entire career. We've allowed things like Jaren can't set screens to just be what it is. We've allowed Jaren doesn't rebound or doesn't have to rebound because of the way we play to just kind of be what it is. We've allowed 0-2-man game between Ja and Jaren to just kind of be what it is. And I think that with the right coaching, you can pull all those things out of Jaren. He's a 7-foot player, still super young, 25 years old, still younger than Ja. He's getting stronger and better every year. I think with the right coaching and the right strategy, you should be able to find ways for Ja and Jaren to both be good at the same time. And then another thing, too, Chris, I heard Chris Harrington talking about this. I know I got the accusations of being long-winded, so let me wrap this up. I heard Chris Harrington talking the other day, right? And he says that the thing about Jaren's contract is with the amount of money he's up for next year, if you do a Jaren Jackson Jr. trade, you're going to get fleeced because you're not going to get the level of player at that price point that you would get for Jaren Jackson. He would have more attention, more teams would want him, sure. But at his salary, you're not going to be able to find a player that's anywhere close to the level of player that Jaren is. So that's kind of where I am, too. I think there's a much better chance that you can move a guy like Dez and incentivize it with draft picks or maybe a young player where you can get a really good quality player coming back as opposed to moving Jaren and getting fleeced in the draft.
They also love Edie. I mean, the front office loves Edie. They spent a top 10 pick on him, and Edie is an investment in Jaren because he addresses Jaren's flaws. And just so I just think it's even more reason to move off. We've moved off the Ja talk, at least those of us here having this conversation, as we should. And I think it's probably more reason to move off the Jaren talk because, again, they're deep in with him. Right? If you're moving off Jaren, then you're looking at Edie and you're saying, well, now we got a center that kind of plays anti-league, right? And you don't have the pop-out, you know, four to play with him. And so I just think it's even more reason to back off the Jaren trade conversation and land where you are. Which is, if you're going to move, shake up this three, it's going to have to be Bane.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I just think that's an opportunity to make our roster make more sense. And that Oklahoma series, to me, the Oklahoma series was a horrible, horrible gauge, right? Because you play against that team, they're going to make you look good. If you ain't right, they're going to make you look bad, right? And that, we saw that in four straight games. Who would have been surprised if we – we're in a better series with Houston like Golden State is now, because that Golden State team is flawed too. And I just think it would have been a better series. But like you said, I think that Oklahoma City series, the way they defend, the way that they just pretty much nullified everybody on the perimeter outside of Ja was kind of scary for me. Like, that kind of bothered me to see how Dez couldn't get anything going against that team. That really kind of alarmed me more than anything going forward.
I was I read a piece from Parker Fleming. He wrote about what a Grizzlies coaching search could look like, and he pointed out, and you were talking about Jaren and getting better, and there's no doubt that seems to be happening. But and this is something that I think the Anthony, the Grizzlies are kind of sorting through. But like Jaren's touches actually went down under Isolo. He was third on the team in touches before Taylor's firing. He was fifth at the end of the regular season and postseason behind Ja and Bane, behind Scottie Pippen, and behind Santi. So if that is real and that is signal, then Isolo must not be the right fit for the job in your mind.
No, that's crazy talk. Man, y'all, oh my God, y'all pissed me off so bad with that, bro. Why are we acting like Tomas Isolo was like running his stuff? Like, come on, bro. He was running what these dudes knew. They had two practices, bro. Like, we don't really know what Tomas Isolo's stuff is. But this stuff we saw the last nine games of the season in the playoffs, it's not his stuff, bro. It's just like me blaming a substitute teacher for coming in and not making my kid a whiz kid in the last week of the school. Like, that's not how it works, bro. We know that. Like, the Grizzlies have been running the goofiest stuff in the world for the last year, which is evident of them firing everybody and starting all over from scratch with this new offense, this new Taylor Jenkins / whatever that guy's name was offense, and with some Tomas Isolo in there too. If Tomas Isolo comes in with nine games left in the season, he can't rebuild and he can't install a new set system with these guys, bro. He's got to take what he has and kind of do the best with it. I don't think any of that is proof of anything. If we're going to see what Jaren is going to be, and what him and Ja are going to be, is whoever's coming in as the coach is going to have to start over from the ground up and build an offense that's based around making those two dudes look good. If you're going to identify those two guys as your guys And if you look at a lot of the reports that are going out, the Grizzlies do seem to be about to try to move Desmond Bane. If that's what you're going to do, you have to try to find something that makes both of those two guys look good. And I'm not going to judge Isolo off of coming in running Taylor Jenkins crap for the last nine games of the season. I just can't do that, bro.
I hear what you're saying, and what else, if Zach Kleiman was with you, and why wouldn't he be, right, with what he did to go get Isolo, why wouldn't he just already do this and make him name
him? Yeah, just go ahead and hire the dude and quit
like, I mean, like, you know, yeah. Sacramento, I know they had a longer look at Christie, but they've already done it. And so that it leads me to wonder, saying, does that lead you to wonder, since you haven't already, we know what you think of him, we know he had a short run that you really couldn't determine anything. Do you think that means they are indeed still going to interview other candidates?
I think he's going to be the guy, but like typical Grizzly stuff, they don't just go ahead and make stuff known. They want to drag it around and see what people are saying about it. Mm-hmm. Man, Greg Popovich retired a few minutes ago. He was like, all right, bro, no, it's not going to be Mike Malone. It's not going to be Eric Spoelstra. It's not going to be Taylor Jenkins. It's going to be this dude who's been sitting up. It's going to be Mitch Johnson, right? It's like, it just did it, and they announced it, and it's done. I don't know why we're screwing around with this so bad. I'm 80% sure it's probably going to be Isolo. Here's the thing. I'm not trying to act like I'm just pro Isolo guy. I think he's a good coach. I think if the Grizzlies don't hire him, he's going to go somewhere and he's going to be good next season. I think he's going to be an NBA coach, head coach next season. But if he's the guy, I don't know. I don't know. I've never seen him after a training camp with the full, you know, keys to the car driving. I've never seen that. I've seen him coming in as a sub, with nine games left in the season. So I don't know what he's going to be. He could be very good. He very, very well could not be. But if you go through history, if you go through league history and you talk about guys who came in to take a team to the next level, the guys are more like him than they are the Mike Malones, than they are the Mike Browns. It's been like some guys a first-year coach. Phil Jackson was a first-year coach. Steve Kerr was a first-year coach. All throughout history, if you look through it, the guy that came in to take the team to the next level, it was just a guy that wasn't nobody's head coach. It wasn't the seasoned vet coach that came in. No, so he kind of fits that mold of guys. I think even with when Greg Popovich steps down from San Antonio, I think the winningest team in NBA history as far as winning percentage is concerned, if they're not one, they're two. If he leaves, and because I thought for sure that job was going to be a high-profile job. Like, I thought Eric Spoelstra was about to leave Miami to go over there. And if San Antonio says, hey, we got one of the better jobs in the NBA, and it's going to Mitch Johnson, I'm telling you, man, like, these younger guys are getting chances. The Mark Dagnalls, all these type of guys, they're getting the chances. What's my guy? The Joe Mazzullas, the Ime Udokas, all these type of guys. They're first-year coaches who are coming in doing their thing. And I think that's kind of the way that the NBA is going these days.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really just have a super strong opinion either way. Like, I think it was a tough spot, and it ended up being tough. Like,
I can't knock that dude for whatever happened, good or bad, man, like, with the amount of time that was coming in. Because, like, we're really acting like that mess wasn't weird as crap, bro. Like, to fire your coach with nine games left in the season. And then you look at, like, Denver, right? Mike Malone he wasn't let go because they were running goofy stuff. They were let go because of personality stuff. So whoever came in as a coach, they're just doing what they've been doing, and it's just a new guy to him. You know what I mean? With Isolo, he's running the stuff that they obviously had a problem with Jenkins about, and Ja obviously had a problem with, other than they took out the goofy stuff and just kind of went back to what they were doing a year or so ago when Jaren was stuck in the corner. You know what I mean? So that's just something whoever's the coach is got to figure out. I don't think that's a Jaren forgot how to play basketball thing at all. They just got to figure out the best strategy for both of those dudes.
Were you okay with I haven't talked to you since Kleiman's exit interview. Did he take enough responsibility and say the right things in terms of your book, or did some of it stand out and rub you the wrong way?
No, that man was sounding crazy. We joked about that big time on the Anthony Saints show. Again, check that out on Bluff City Media. We were joking about Kleiman. The man was sounding crazy, bro. He was sounding
defensive.
I don't know, man.
I don't know who needs to hear this.
Yeah, you know, he was sounding like Robert Parrott was fresh off his ass. Like, to be honest with you, he sounded like him and Parrott like just had a conversation right before he came out there. But he definitely sounds like a guy that's got pressure on him, man. But that's another thing too, man. Everybody's like, you know, fire Zach Kleiman, all these type of things. I went into detail about that on my show. Go check that out. But I will say this. I don't think he's dumb. I don't think he's a stupid GM. I think he's a prideful GM. I think he can get very arrogant at times. And I think he I think the position can get over his head sometimes. But I think he sees the same things we do. And I'm confident that he's got at least a level of competency to realize, hey, I got to spend the MLE this year. I got to figure out a way to make Jaren's contract work if he doesn't make the All-NBA team, which I think he won't. He's got to figure out, what am I going to do with Santi? You know, he's got some tough decisions to make, but it's on him, bro. But like I said, I think he does have pressure on him. I don't think he's sitting on the ice cube over there at all, but he's got to figure out what to do. But I don't think he's not capable of doing it.
Yeah. And then around the rest of the NBA, the Minnesota Timberwolves send LeBron and Luka home packing in five games.
Let's talk about the rest of the NBA for sure. Hey, I was excited about that. People were crowning the Lakers as if that team didn't have obvious flaws, the same thing that everybody else was talking about. But, man, it's the difference between, you know, regular season basketball and playoff basketball, like you already know, and the good coaches, the good teams know how to find what's wrong with you. They see blood in the water, and they're just going to dig even deeper. That Lakers team does not have any bigs. When people were trying to blow up Jackson Hayes, I was like, bro, this is Jackson Hayes.
Do they have a coach? Do they have a coach? You're right. They don't have any bigs.
Yes,
they even have a coach in J.J. Redick? I don't know about him.
Yes,
man.
I think J.J. Redick's really good, bro. We got to get these guys time, man. We got to get these guys time. I think J.J. Redick is really good. And I think that – but you know what?
Really arrogant.
Oh, he's always super arrogant. Here's the thing, too, though, bro. Like, just like Isolo, right? J.J. Redick is really good, but I'm not sure you'll see the best J.J. Redick there. Like, I never thought that Lakers job was a good job for him to take. Like, and they're so goofy, they'll fire him in a year or two just because they're goofballs. But, like, everybody got excited about the Luka deal, right? I don't see that thing going well at all, because LeBron's getting out of there soon. And Luka, if he don't have dudes, like guys to go with him, I've seen some really bad Dallas Mavericks teams, bro. Some really bad ones with Luka looking like best player in the world. So, and they're going to have to actually build something around Luka going forward, because LeBron is not going to play forever. And I could definitely see a situation where that thing goes really bad in L.A. I don't know if that's wishful thinking of Miami, because I hate the Lakers so much. But we'll see how that whole thing goes for sure.
Yeah. Same.
Shout out to Jason Smith's favorite player, Anthony Edwards. He's totally –
You like that
totally
victory lap, man?
It.
Yeah, I mean, and we're, oh, we yeah. do it, and we a man hey. Of the people. You know what I'm saying?
Man, you know what, bro? I'm jealous of my brother lives in Minneapolis, right?
Yep.
You know, my brother performed with Prince.
A musician, yes.
My brother's a musician. Like, he's part of the whole Prince family tree. But, man, I'm so jealous, bro, because just seeing Anthony Edwards literally walking around, not Staples Center, whatever they call it now, Crypto Center, whatever, Crypto Arena. Just seeing him talking noise in that arena, outside the arena.
Man,
I was like, bro, I'm so jealous. Because John's the same level of bravado, dude.
Yeah, oh, he's got it in the
My boy just can't get right, man. Because John can't get right out here, man. I know John would have been on the same type of stuff, but even wilder if we had the one, man. So it's like, I feel the way. But Ant's one of my favorite players for sure. Like, we were having a discussion, like, is he the best two-way player in the league?
Yep.
I got Giannis over him, but that's about it, bro.
No, you might have got me. You might have got me just because what Giannis is right now and what he's still – I mean, at this age, what he still is. But I'm telling you right now, Anthony Edwards is going to win a Defensive Player of the Year before it's all said and done. I guarantee you that.
Like, when it comes down to that, too, I know this is a totally different conversation, but when it comes down to things like that, like if somebody – like when people said who was the better player, Kobe or Tim Duncan, right? Tim Duncan might have been the better player, but he wasn't the dude on the ball with the perimeter making the plays. Okay. All that type of stuff. It's just like with Anthony Edwards. You might say that Giannis is a better defender, or, you know, the Jaren Jackson Juniors of the world are better defenders, right? Or what's my guy in Cleveland, right?
Mobley.
They just won. Mobley. You might say, like, they're better. They're great defenders, right? But even guys who are, like, big shot block guys who have high, crazy shot block numbers, those type of guys get more flash than the guys that are, like, analytically good defenders, or teams don't score when he's on the court type thing, whether you're seeing him blocking a shot or not. But those guys out on the perimeter that are locking up the best players on the other team and getting in their ear and all those type of things, that's why guys like the Dyson Daniels of the world have these cult followings for, you know, Defensive Player of the Year, or Marcus Smart back when he won it. Those type of guys are much more flashy and with what they do, and you like seeing those perimeter defenders better. But, yeah, Ant is a dog, man. He's one of those guys who he's just an incredible player, and he's got the moxie, like you said, and he runs his mouth. I just kind of wish he would just stop being an idiot at times, because the things that he does in his personal life are just kind of ridiculous.
No question.
I wish he would tighten those things up, because when you talk about
it's maturity.
You know, I hate the whole You know, I hate the whole face of the league conversation. I think that's just silly talk. But he is, without a doubt, one of the faces of the league. I think that there are several guys that are part of the next generation of the NBA, and he's definitely, you know, in that the lead of those type of things. So I just hope he understands, you know, the responsibility of those type of things. Just one thing, we clown and we joke LeBron about a lot of things, but LeBron clearly understood what it meant to be, you know, the guy that everybody is dependent on. And I think about, like, the league really needs Ant to be that dude. They need Ja to be that dude, bro. You know what I mean? They need Wimby, all these guys to be understand their responsibility. And, like, USA Basketball needs Anthony Edwards to be that dude, bro. You know what I mean? So I'm pulling for him. I hope he gets it together. He gets really frustrated sometimes with just some of the goofy things he does. But when he gets it, when people are predicting this team to lose in five, and he turns around and beats that team in five, and he walks around the arena, I got to get on his side on them.
Last thing, how about Brunson? You know, a lot of people talk about Luka being traded from Dallas, but there was a move that they made before that, which was letting Jalen Brunson walk. So that's two all NBA guys that they have either traded or allowed to leave in 3 years. Mm-hmm. That's tough for that franchise, bro.
You know me, man. I would come on there in these very seats we're sitting in now, and I would say things like, man, I can't wait till Dallas crumbles. They lost Brunson. Luka's going to get up out of here, too. And I was excited about the downfall of Dallas, right? But I did not know it was going to mean Luka was going to the Lakers. I was like, okay, this is an even worse nightmare for me as far as that goes, man. But Brunson's a heck of a player, man. But that's another thing, too. That's another example, bro. That, because the cliche or the common thing to say is that, oh, man, the Knicks, what they're doing, it's a failure, man. You know, Boston's going to beat them, and they're not going to win the championship. And Brunson took a pay cut to play with these dudes and play with his friends and old teammates, and they're not going to win at all. Man, the Knicks have been crap for the last 20 years, bro. Like, that if they can keep a team that's going to be in that level for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years or whatever, with that core of guys they have, Man, I would love to just give me one of the wings y'all got. One of those, because they got like three wings playing in the starting lineup. Just give me one of them, bro, and I would love it. And like I said, that Knicks team is good. They're probably not good enough to win a championship this year, but I'm not the person who's going to act like, you know, that's not a successful thing. I think being in the top of your conference, in the top of the league, those type of things matter, bro, whether you're winning championships or not.
Absolutely. Same, man. Appreciate the time, as
Thank
always.
Thank you, brother. Have a great weekend.
Appreciate y'all, man.
Yes, sir.
Anthony Sane.